California has a housing crisis and a homelessness crisis. More than a quarter of the country's homeless population lives in our state. Many are unsheltered. They live on the streets or in cars and RVs. And the crisis has the state and local leaders taking action, trying to do more. Today, as part of our California Dream collaboration, we'll talk with the mayors of Los Angeles, San Diego, Sacramento, and Oakland about the way forward and what they'd like to see more of. I'm Laurel Rosenhall. This is Crisis on the Streets, a mayor's forum on homelessness. This is Crisis on the Streets, a mayor's forum on homelessness. I'm Laurel Rosenhall of CalMatters. Homelessness is one of the most significant and complex challenges facing California. Cities across the state are tackling it in their own ways. So we invited mayors of four of the state's largest cities to discuss what they are doing, what they'd like to do. Our panel included Kevin Falconer of San Diego, Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles, Libby Schaff of Oakland, and Daryl Steinberg of Sacramento. I moderated the conversation, which took place in the auditorium of the Secretary of State building in Sacramento. We start with recent municipal tax increases and approval of statewide ballot propositions targeting housing and homelessness. With that infusion of funding, I asked the mayors when they expect their cities will see improvements, starting with Mayor Steinberg of Sacramento.
I pledged, and you know, my political consultant said, well, what did you say? That we have to get 2,000 people off the streets over the next 3 years. And that was a year ago. So
2020,
2,000 people off the
streets. Noticeable decrease?
Yes.
Okay. Mayor Schaff?
Well, first of all, the tax that just passed, we're not going to actually see that money for a long time. It's a very uncertain tax. It's on vacant property. So it's very unknown. I'm not holding my breath over that one, frankly. I can tell you that based on, you know, the HEAP funding, cobbling things together, we will, within 1 year, add either safe parking spaces or new shelter beds, whether they're in a tough shed cabin community, a traditional shelter, or one of our rapid rehousing centers. We've added capacity in all those areas. We will add about 900 more beds, basically tripling the supply of emergency beds that we had a year ago. But I'm going to be rude and just answer a question you didn't ask me. Mm-hmm. How unlike a politician to do that? And I just want to point out, there is no dedicated governmental funding source to prevent homelessness. It is ridiculous. We had to spend 2 years scraping around and begging philanthropy, which we were successful at doing. And we finally announced about a month ago, Keep Oakland Housed. And this is a three-pronged approach, where we provide emergency financial assistance. Now that may be back rent, but it depends on that household's unique situation about what has caused their risk of losing their house. We provide free legal assistance and we provide case management to assess the ongoing ability for that household to stay housed. In our first 10 days, we kept 60 families in 10 days from becoming homeless. One of my favorite stories was Deborah Ross. The total cost to keep her housed was $800. That is all she needed to keep her housing for herself and her grandson. That is the most cost-effective investment that we can make. It is shameful that we do not have dedicated public funding for this.
Let's change that.
Oh, Daryl, I have no doubt we will.
That's Amen. The now we're forming the see we're forming the Big 11 agenda here. That's on
exactly.
stage.
Well, and again, thank you philanthropy for giving me $9 million to do this and to document and evaluate and demonstrate just how cost effective this is, so that this then can become a popular agenda that we can sell to the legislature.
Mayor Garcetti, your voters approved this new money a couple years ago, so you've had some time. So, you know, how soon do you think that there will be a noticeable decrease in homelessness?
It's a great question, and respectfully, it's the wrong question, because we don't know what the supply end will be. If you're going to be responsible and answer that, I've come now after working on this issue since I was 14 years old and as a mayor for the last 5.5 years. You cannot responsibly answer what the net will be if you don't know the supply. I can do what Daryl talked about. I can tell you how many people we will house. I think we'll go from, we used to be 8,800 a year. This past year, 16,500. My gut is that it'll probably be over 20,000 this year, people who are actually housed out of homelessness. But if we don't know what happens with the economy, if we don't know what the criminal justice reforms without a true safety net are going to be, and we have huge supplies of people coming out of prisons and jails, if we don't know what work is being done in child welfare, if we don't know if we're finally winding down a war in Afghanistan and how many vets are going to be coming home, if we don't know what infrastructure is out there for domestic and sexual violence, I can't give you a net number.
Okay. That's right.
And so until we approach it that way, I think, and that is the beautiful thing about homelessness. Homelessness is not an issue. It is a prism that refracts everything in our cities, in our societies. And if we're truly interested in ending a condition on our streets because it's either inconvenient, appalling, or morally we don't like it, it requires us to dig deep into multiple policy areas at the same time, which is what's so exciting to me, is that we can do those together.
Mayor Faulkner?
You know, one of the things, that we, just to take off on working particularly with the private sector, I had a goal of getting 1,000 veterans off the street in a year or less. It took us 16 months to do that. But one of the things that we did was we interacted with our landlord community. And I said, I need your help. I need your help for men and women that have served our country, that were trying to get into housing. And there was a stigma, right, about providing housing to folks that are homeless. And so I said, one of the things that we wanted to do is to be smart about how the resources that we had. And so guaranteeing first month's, last month's extra security deposit to try to help alleviate some of those concerns, because we needed people to actually have a place to go. And the success of that program, as I think in part of the model that we're gonna try to do with our entire homeless population, with our landlord community, to say, here, look, there's some financial guarantees, if you will, right? Because a lot of folks are bottom line oriented that own apartments, but also not to fear. Fear is a powerful human emotion. And if we can take away some of that fear by demonstrating how something can actually work, and the number of individuals in that program, in our Housing Our Heroes program, that had problems with some of the units was 4 out of 1,000. And so it's trying the all of the above approach. It's trying to take, in this case, which was literally some extra help in gap dollars that could really get people into a unit. And so as we're moving forward with some of the dollars with our HEAP dollars and others, there is gonna be a measure on a future San Diego ballot, a Citizens Initiative that just qualified for not only expanding our convention center, but approximately $500 million for homelessness. Let's be smart and targeted with those dollars and put it to use now so we can get people off the street now. And again, into a cycle that's a positive cycle, where you're showing that, you know, sometimes just that small amount of dollars can make the difference between able to afford an apartment or not.
When do you think that the people in your community will see a difference?
Well, hopefully they're seeing a difference now. But I think to what you've heard from all of the mayors, as we tackle this, it's not only helping folks that are on the street, but trying desperately to say, preventing not just additional folks from falling into homelessness. So how do you do that? You do that by not only some of the temporary emergency issues that we're dealing with, but again, back to some of the permanent solutions to make housing in general more affordable for everybody in our city and more opportunities to be able to move into that housing. If we don't do that, if we don't do that in any of our cities, we won't be successful.
Okay.
I think that's the right frame, actually. It's that if we want to see a visual difference, it isn't about whether or not there's a lot of work and activity. We are going to have to scale this up to something that is double or triple the size of even all of our collective efforts.
Okay.
If you're looking at the visual difference of the net coming down, because we've never housed people, I think, as quickly, as aggressively, as comprehensively, as much services, and still, it's not enough. I mean, on veterans, I took the pledge. And the reason why I want to dig in, I said it was a good question, but the wrong one. I've learned that lesson personally as a politician. So at the beginning, Michelle Obama was going around the country asking mayors to end veterans' homelessness. I took that pledge. Many of us probably did. LA by far had the most. I think it was 6,500 vets who were homeless on our streets. And then headlines a couple years later was that LA had failed. Now, let me describe what the failure was. We housed 9,000 homeless vets, the most in the country. We put all hands on. We had the VA, we had local government, county, city, all together. It was extraordinary. I stood up a new office of Veterans Affairs. We had, by pure numbers, the greatest success in the country, but we have 2,000 left. So in other words, from that 6,500, There was a new 5,000 who have become homeless. And people said, you have failed. I don't mind that because we run for office. We're used to criticism. But what it did is it took the air out of the balloon of people thinking we can make a difference here. And so I think it's really important for our reporting on this because I don't always get that nuance. It's not a complaint. But I told a main homelessness reporter in Los Angeles, said, you have to tell some good news stories or people will say, this is unsolvable, sweep them out, or whatever it is, or we'll give up on this. When there actually is a lot of momentum of real people, real stories, real successes, at the same time we have to say, and let's double it, not say you guys failed, because I guarantee you the next crop of mayors, if the stamp is failure on everybody, we'll say, I'm not touching homelessness. Okay.
So getting the money is one hurdle, and spending it is another. As we've seen in Los Angeles, where your voters did pass this tax increase, now you're having a really hard time getting people to agree to have shelters put in their neighborhoods. And I know there's been some pretty raucous public meetings. You've been booed. You're getting a lot of pushback. And Mayor Steinberg, this is an issue you're going to be facing really soon. You've said you're going to announce new shelter locations next month for Sacramento. So I was wondering, Mayor Garcetti, do you have any advice for Mayor Steinberg?
On sure. Daryl. So where do I start? No, you know, again, I think it's overreported because it's so much easier to report the opposition than the ones that have no opposition. Like, that's never an article. And I would say that we've done polling on this. 60 to 70% of people consistently say yes to supportive housing in their neighborhood, right by them, and now the bridge housing shelters. So can you get a community meeting? Like, we had one in Venice, California. We had about 400 people in support of doing something at a bus yard. They didn't get there as early as the 300 people who were opposed to it and who were kind of indoors. And it was the most raucous public meeting of my life. 4.5 hours of, like, as my council member, Mike Bonin, was describing who some of these people were. Somebody actually yelled, don't humanize this. We had the chief of police there with a badge and a gun who got a little bit more respect because of those two things. But people just interrupting, yelling. It's kind of the death of civil discourse in America embodied at its highest. But it was a great meeting, too. A lot of people said afterwards,
that sounds like it.
Do you regret it? And I stayed there for 4.5 hours until, because after 2.5 hours we stopped and the news cameras went away. People were a little bit more civil, interestingly, when those were gone. And they said, you're leaving. I said, nope, I'm not going to leave till every single one of you who wants to talk to me can talk to me. And me and the council member stood for another 2 hours, I'd say, or an hour and a half, until we looked around and nobody was left in the room. We outlasted every person in the room. We can't get 100% agreement on anything, but it was really necessary to hear that. So I would do some of that, but I also tell elected officials, don't process these things to death, because when they open,
can't wait.
To your point, it becomes a person. Oh, I thought it was going to be bad having vets in my apartment, and you know, 4 out of 1,000 is probably a better rate than folks who aren't homeless being tenants in general, if you're a landlord. So do the minimum, and I don't mean that in a superficial way, but yes, listen to people, but do something. Actually build it, open it up, and then I think it changes the conversation. And for us, we have about 40 sites we're looking at simultaneously. Most don't have anywhere near that level of opposition. We had protests about one, and we moved it 3 blocks away, and everybody said, great, we want it there. So it wasn't that the neighborhood didn't want it. And the last piece is listen to people's fears. Opponents, some are against homeless individuals. People are experiencing homelessness. But most are usually experiencing something else, either about public safety or cleanliness. And it doesn't mean that they're wrong because they're yelling and conflating that with homelessness. So at that meeting in Venice, for instance, it was clear we needed some more police resources for whether it was somebody who was homeless or not committing criminal acts. And everybody feels a little bit more satisfied that they were listened to by government. And it isn't just about whether they oppose or favor a shelter.
And I'll add, we've had an interesting experience by using this geographic approach. Yeah. So with the Tough Shed Cabin communities, they're small, but the deal is you get one in your neighborhood, but it serves the homeless that were already in that neighborhood.
Yep.
So again, the neighbors have actually become huge fans, and we bring them to the next neighborhood to actually give testimony of just how much it improved their quality of life. And then the other thing about our Tough Shed Cabin communities is we are actually about to decommission the first one because we only were able to get an 18-month lease on that piece of property. So we often find pieces of property that are about to be developed, and we have permission to be there. I mean, our minimum length of stay is 18 months, but the idea that this actually might go away someday has also been a selling point now. Mm-hmm. We're replacing it fourfold somewhere else. but that has also helped the conversation. But at the end of the day, and I mean, we all know this, we signed up to be unpopular,
right?
in a weird way, right? And so I always say, like, to the council member, you know, just say, like, it's the mayor's fault. I'm the one who's making it happen. You, like, hear them, and you've tried your best to advocate for them, and it's the damn mayor.
So we're going to, yes, I agree with that. I mean, I think a couple elements.
Can I say that in L.A. about the open mayor? Or
Please.
I just always say it's Cheryl's fault.
Say it's my fault. It is. It's a combination of all the above. You have to do what Mayor Garcetti described in Venice, right? You have to engage with the people in the community, and you have to listen, and you have to listen endlessly. But you also can't take no for an answer when you know you've got an obligation here. And that's where the will of a mayor and the willingness to be a little bit unpopular. I say, as we begin developing our fair share policy in Sacramento, that it's okay if everyone's a little bit mad, as opposed to one community being horribly mad because it's all there. And what we found in North Sacramento with our Railroad Avenue shelter is that the fury died down as soon as they saw that what came with the shelter, by the way, were additional resources for neighborhood cleanup, for law enforcement, and a lot of the surrounding area actually got better as a result. Yep. So proving concept, of course, is crucial. But in the end, it does take a large amount of will and political will to say that no matter how much one fears the placement of a homeless triage center, for example, it is better than the status quo, because the status quo is unacceptable. And by the way, homelessness is no longer just a downtown issue anymore. It spreads throughout our entire community, and everyone's affected.
This is Crisis on the Streets, a mayor's forum on homelessness. I'm Laurel Rosenhall from CalMatters. This is Crisis on the Streets, a mayor's forum on homelessness.
So there was an interesting ruling from the Ninth Circuit this fall in the what's called the Boise case. It obviously comes out of Idaho, but it affects all the states in the Ninth Circuit, including California, that basically says prosecuting people for sleeping on the streets is a type of cruel and unusual punishment that violates the Constitution. The judges wrote that as long as there's no option of sleeping indoors, the government cannot criminalize indigent homeless people for sleeping outdoors on public property on the false premise that they had a choice in the matter. And I'd like each of you to say what this decision means for your city, maybe starting with Mayor Falconer. You faced a lot of criticism in 2017 for conditions that festered for a long time that contributed to a hepatitis outbreak that eventually killed 20 people. You then began disrupting unauthorized homeless camps and said that San Diego, quote, will no longer tolerate the use of a sidewalk, a riverbed, or a tarp as a home. So I'm just wondering, is this a practice that you can continue under the Boise ruling?
Yeah, it's really about an unsafe, unsanitary environment. It's not something that anyone should be forced into sleeping in at night or during the day. And in fact, when we talk about, like, for example, in San Diego, our homeless outreach teams from our police department, it is always the offer of, we have a bed for you tonight. That's the first thing that when we're going out there and talking to folks is, not from an enforcement standpoint, is how can we help you tonight? And that is obviously incredibly important, because there's one goal. It's not about arresting people. It's about getting people help. And so that's been the approach that we've been taking. And at the same time, not only just, by the way, in our streets and in sidewalks, but particularly also in our canyons and in our San Diego River. It has everything to do with, you cannot allow unsanitary and unclean conditions that affect your water quality and other issues. We're very serious about that. We're very serious about saying there is a place to go. Now, it's incumbent upon us to provide those opportunities, right? In the midst of opposition, in the midst of, yes, I do not want individuals on the sidewalks or the streets, what folks will say, or in our canyons. And then we get pushback when we say, okay, well, we're going to open a bridge shelter here, we're going to do that there. But that has always been the approach that I've taken. And I've also said that, you know, for too long, elected officials, and I said this including myself, have waited for universal consensus on this issue that doesn't exist. If you're going to wait for universal consensus, we're all going to be waiting. And that gets back to the issue of being bold, being innovative, not being afraid to take some of the heat, but then backing it up, you know, particularly we're talking about the storage center that we started in San Diego. A lot of fear about what's going to happen to the neighborhood if we start this. And what I said is the neighborhood will be cleaner. You will see a marked difference. You're going to help people that need this facility. And you have to trust some of that, but trust is believing when you actually open it.
Okay.
And if we opened it and it wasn't working, we weren't going to have the results that we have, but you have to be able to cut through that and to say, take the chance and make sure you're doing a difference. And with that approach, then we're able to do more. And that's why I said that action-oriented is one of the things that I think is helping us in San Diego.
But on the criminalization issue, did your city change practices after this ruling came out in September?
You know, we've all, for the last several years, we've always had that same approach, which is, here's what we know, the offer is services.
What about the others? Did you change things after the ruling?
We've used our camping ordinance in a very limited way. Look, while the Boise decision has caused a lot of consternation among local governments, in my opinion, it's actually very logical. It is a call and a cry for the state, for the cities, and the counties to build more shelter and to be able to offer a shelter bed to someone, which is our practice and policy as well, before you would consider citing someone. And that's logical.
So have you made a change since this ruling?
We are rarely using, if ever, the camping ordinance. Where we break up campsites now, it's based on public health, it's based upon obstruction of the sidewalks, it's based upon other grounds.
And so you're not prosecuting those people? Is that the difference?
We're not prosecuting people in the camping
ordinance. What about the other cities?
No change in how we're acting. But I guess my frustration is the case created, I think, some confusion and an impression that the city could not do anything. And so it has kind of emboldened the advocacy community to kind of take the position that we don't ever have the right to move anyone against their will. And that is not what that case says.
Yep.
The case recognizes that cities do have public health concerns. We have a federal obligation to keep sidewalks clear for disabled community under the ADA. We have other vulnerable communities that are sometimes in conflict with our unsheltered residents.
So you're saying moving people elsewhere or moving them along is frequently the cliche, is different than prosecuting and criminalizing?
Correct, particularly when you have an articulated public policy reason.
Okay.
You're not criminalizing them, but you are requiring them to relocate, and you are offering them shelter.
Mayor Garcetti, has you changed?
No change. We already had basically a ruling that applied to the city of Los Angeles that was similar to Boise. So overnight sleeping and people, no. Possessions and daytime right-of-way, yes, but we don't criminalize that. We've been very clear that, and working with advocates to hopefully not have this lawsuit back and forth. I've been sitting down saying, just first premise, do you believe that we should be able to clear and clean during the daytime, whatever prescribed hours? If yes, help us write it. So you don't have to just wait for us, react to it, and sue us, and be lost for 5 or 6 years of momentum where nobody's helped at all.
One very small slice, but very visible slice of the homeless population, they're the people who use a disproportionate amount of public services, with many trips to jails and emergency rooms due to mental health and addiction problems. Jerry Brown signed a controversial law this year that allows three counties, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego, to basically force these people into treatment through a process called conservatorship. Counties would have to prove that they could provide housing and wraparound services before they participate, but then they can conserve people, individuals with serious mental illness and substance abuse disorders who have been detained by police and refused treatment. And so I'm just wondering, for the two relevant mayors here, Garcetti and Falconer, do you have any intentions to use this new procedure?
Well, it will sometimes be us, but it will mostly be the counties. And I believe that there is that intention, of course. And the reason I think the county supported it in Los Angeles. We all know these cases, if you just want to humanize, it's the person who Right now, the standard is you have to immediately be harming yourself or somebody else. Otherwise, you can be that person on that bus bench for, as I know one woman was like, for 5 months there, just kind of sitting and rotting away. And clearly, deeply mentally ill, dealing with demons, dealing with, we can all see it, but we're powerless. And in those cases, yes. And I do think, you know, the reaction to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is now, whatever, 50 years later, still don't ever do anything because you might be putting somebody in some sort of institution who doesn't have, because of your opinion, true mental health issues. We know that there are some that I think we could get pretty close to 100% support in this room or any reasonable person. And I think this gives those counties the tools. It shouldn't be police making those determinations.
How many people do you think it will be in LA?
No idea.
Okay. What about in San Diego?
Yeah, we're at the very beginning of those conversations. In fact, our county board of supervisors just held a session on behavioral health, mental health that I attended. And what is the right balance, I think, is what it comes down to. We all know the need, and we see, and you know, fortunately, voters supported when it came to Proposition 2 for the housing
right.
element and to get that going. But I would just, you know, share when we talk about homelessness, and our bridge shelters now is a model, is a laboratory for being able to really get some real-time data now that we didn't have before. You know, close to 50% of mental health or substance abuse issues that are in there. And so that's the type of, when it comes to the whole issue of behavioral health, that is, I think, the next challenge that all of us are trying to work in a much more urgent way.
Mayor Garcetti, mm-hmm. your constituents, you know, have given you billions of dollars to alleviate homelessness. And I'm just wondering whether your ability to, you know, solve this issue in your city factors into your decision of whether to run for president.
No, not at all. But thank you for bringing those
Is
together.
Is that
no.
question for all of us or just for Mayor Garcetti?
If Steinberg runs, I think that's much more influential on me, and I'd be happy to serve with Daryl if the Constitution didn't prohibit it. But no, this predates and will long post-date any of that decision. One thing I will say is this better be a national conversation soon, too. It's one thing that we've elevated this up to the state level, but if one of us were president or a mayor were president or somebody struggling with this were president, this would be a priority in this country. If 10 of us had a broken leg and we went to an emergency room, we would all get help. But if 10 of us are addicted to opioids or dealing with mental health issue and we go to the emergency room, I bet not even one of us will get into a program that day. So absolutely, this is a national conversation, one that I welcome when people say, you know, oh my gosh, how could you even think about running when, you know, these things are happening here? Go to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, where it's higher per capita than us. That's in the back, you know, yard of the White House. If we don't elevate this up in Congress and our president and others take this seriously, again, you'll keep asking those numerical questions. We can't answer them. We can say we're going to do better and better each year. We're adding more and more dollars each year. But don't require the mayors of this country to be the cleanup crew for collective national failure to deal with the sources of why these things happen. But I'd leave it to reporters to decide at the next panel.
Noted.
Session.
Gavin Newsom, as he campaigned for governor, he talked a lot about the need for more affordable housing and more leadership from the state on homelessness. He's mentioned the possibility of bringing back redevelopment agencies that helped fund low-income housing, creating a cabinet-level position to address homelessness statewide, and he's called for a regional planning-type approach to homelessness to encourage more cooperation between cities and counties, something several of you have mentioned. But, you know, fundamentally, this is a local problem. You guys are in charge. And I'm just wondering, do you want the state to stay out of it? Or is there a policy that the state could help you with?
No. Let me jump
too.
In.
Okay.
Go ahead. We want, no, yes.
Yeah, stay away from this problem. Yeah. Please, leave us alone.
This is a statewide issue. And again, back to the urgency. And everybody here on this stage engaged on the local level. But when we look at some of the... You know, what are some of the issues that we can be dealing with right now on the statewide level, to answer your question directly, and I got to this earlier, we have to reestablish tax increment that was the number one source.
Also known as redevelopment.
Redevelopment mm-hmm. for affordable housing in California.
I didn't do it, by the way.
No, but we're united on moving forward on that. That went away, was it 6 years ago now? In the case of San Diego, that was close to $300 million. that we could be using for affordable housing
okay.
that we don't have. And another, you know, back to as the governor is putting his checklist together, which is an important issue, absolutely. The state and the legislature should be jumping in. And I have to stress again, CEQA reform has to be at the top of that list, ladies and gentlemen. We have to have the ability to get projects through the system without having to wait for years to build them.
Okay, I can see Mayor Steinberg is itching to jump in on this.
I just think
one
of the very hopeful things is that Governor-elect Newsom is going to make this a top two or three priority.
Yep.
He's been very clear about
very
it.
Very exciting.
As a former mayor, and he knows that this is a key statewide issue, and it is more flexible funding for the kinds of things that the cities are championing that we've talked about here today. We got a down payment last year with $500 million. We'd like to make that, you know, ongoing in some way and even elevated. But it's also some of these regulatory. Thank you. It's also these regulatory.
Just trying to lead that crowd clap so that you know.
It's also the regulatory issues around to make it easier to site, to be able to build, and finally, I'm going to go back to what Libby said and Eric. There must be a statewide strategy and approach, funded approach to prevention and early intervention, not just by the way. For people who are living on the edge, but for the teenagers who are showing early signs of psychosis and the mental health issue, the key paradigm shift in mental health, and I spent a lifetime in this particular field, is changing this system from a stage four system where you only get help, if at all, when you fail, to a stage one system where we help people when they begin to show the signs, because that ultimately is what is going to prevent much of the next generation of people who are going to end up in our jails and on our streets.
What about you, Mayor Schaaf? Other than money, are there policy changes from the state level that you'd like to see?
Yeah, I mean, we need full-scale system change. You know, I just always get back to how my day started the day before yesterday. I had an officer respond to a 911 call. People heard screams. He discovered a woman who was living in her car who just gave birth to a baby by herself. Her baby was unresponsive. The good news is that the officer actually saved the life of the baby. But has anyone here given birth to a baby or watched a woman give birth to a baby? Can you imagine that we, in the wealthiest region, in the wealthiest state, in the wealthiest nation, are tolerating that as a reality? That is fundamentally wrong. And we can talk all day about funding and policy for our endless cycle of triage, getting people off the street and into safety and services, getting them into rapid rehousing, building more permanent supportive housing, preventing homelessness to begin with. But what the f***? Sorry. This is a fundamentally broken system that needs to be reimagined from the get-go. So obviously, I have very strong feelings about this.
As you should.
So I just hope that we don't keep on tweaking this cycle that we have become complacent with.
Amen.
That we, in this great nation, state, set of cities, say that this is not tolerable. And that we envision a whole different system.
And is that like completely revisioning a system, something you can imagine coming out of the state capitol?
You know, I have to say that I am full of hope that there is more political will, more political courage than we have ever seen in California at this moment. And so I am actually very hopeful. I mean, you saw the bipartisan alignment of mayors, regardless of party, how we've worked together. We have a governor who ran on the concept of courage, on bold ideas, on re-envisioning how government works. And I actually have hope in this moment. I do.
Okay. It was January this year that we were in Washington, D.C. for the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I was handing the gavel over to Daryl for the Big 11. And it was what Kevin's words said today. Here was a Republican from Southern California. We had Lee Brand, I think, Republican from cheaper housing, Fresno, Central Valley. It was Libby, myself, Robert Garcia from Long Beach. And one by one, we went through and we said, this is the biggest issue in our city. Mm-hmm. It cut across demography, geography, party. And if in 1 year, what's the last time in Sacramento, something that had no funding stream, no proposed legislation, went from a conversation in January to $500 million, where I had a check in my hand for $85 million. You still get a paper check from the state of California. We got to talk to them about that. A week and a half ago, you got your check, and we spent $3 million of it the next day. So is there the will there? Absolutely, because any caring Californian knows this is not an issue. It is the issue, and it is everywhere in our state. And I'm so excited a governor is running on this, has been elected on this, has experience with this, a legislature that is ready to jump in and are falling over themselves to sponsor things. And we've got, you know, I wrote down 8 things that we've talked about that's already a state agenda. And that's after we're doing our local stuff. We're not saying save us. We've already been trying to save ourselves, but we're sick of pulling people out of the river without figuring out why they're falling in.
This is Crisis on the Streets, a mayor's forum on homelessness from the California Dream Collaboration. I'm Laurel Rosenhall from CalMatters. This is Crisis on the Streets, a mayor's forum on homelessness.
I'm going to start with a question we got on social media before the event started, which is timely. It's about the campfire, the one that's burning up in Butte County. It's displaced thousands of people, obviously, and will strain neighboring cities and counties. Our reader, whose name is Tim, is asking how mayors are planning for this sort of new normal of these kind of natural disasters that have this ripple effect on shelter in neighboring communities.
Well, first of all, we have to maximize the use of our public facilities for emergency shelter. You know, we're a home to the state fairgrounds. CalExpo once housed the what we call the winter shelter, and no longer does. And so we're in conversation with our state fairground leaders in the governor's office about how we use our large public facilities to be able to house people, not only in emergency situations, but as part of our neighborhood-based triage strategy throughout Sacramento. We have to maximize what we have and utilize it rapidly.
In Oakland, the thing I am most excited about is an effort called CASA, the Committee to House the Bay Area. And this idea that we have to not think city by city by city, but recognize the interdependence that we have as a whole region, I think is one of the most important ideas that we all need to embrace. And so CASA is looking at a very bold agenda, both policy as well as revenue, that would protect renters, would preserve existing affordable housing, and would produce a lot more housing at every income level to meet the need of everyone in the Bay Area. And so this recognition that we have to see ourselves as interdependent, I think, is the kind of thing that will make us resilient and able to respond when you have these displacement events. And I mean, the fire is a very tangible displacement event, but you know, I give the example of Cupertino approving a new Apple headquarters and inviting, you know, 11,000 workers to drive into their city every day. And that same year that they opened that headquarters, they approved permits for only 27 new units of housing. So that's another kind of displacement emergency that is not quite as dramatic, mm-hmm. but is also important and recognizes our interdependence.
Great point. Thank you. Mayor Garcetti?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the issues I was thinking about while Libby was talking was that Prop 10 failed. If local government isn't empowered to make certain decisions to help stop that displacement and to be able to address rents, then it's on Sacramento. Because Sacramento can do that in the legislature. And I think that this is a great moment. The things that aren't going to kill off a housing market aren't going to be part of all the kind of scare tactics of Prop 10. But we do pay the costs of, you know, housing that goes up 25, 50, 100% in rents in a single year. We all do. You know, we might make way for beautiful new things and luxury housing, but we all pay a very expensive price, and then people want us to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to solve homelessness as a result of the inaction of us being able to preserve renters where they are. And that's a huge, huge piece of this, and I think it we need to be able to talk about that. But in terms of the fire question, you know, we have mostly in our city right now folks from other cities because of the Woolsey Fire in Los Angeles. I went to those places and our community colleges and our high schools, and it was, if you ever feel, somebody asked how I was feeling the other day, and I said, I feel broken and I feel strong. And I was kind of surprised that I said both of those words. I feel broken because after African Americans being hunted down and killed and 11 Jewish Americans being hunted down and killed, and then what happened, the elections, and then the next day there were 12 people shot in the 307th mass shooting in this country in Thousand Oaks, and then the fires broke out the next minute. It's like tough not to feel broken. Yeah. But when you go into a shelter and you see people who have been there without sleeping for hours, a volleyball team who shows up at Pierce College, Community College for practice, realizes there's no practice, and then just gets to work helping neighbors, and the piles of clothes that come in and the food. Like, there is a human heart that is big. What's tough about folks that are experiencing homelessness is it's not a big burn, it's a slow, smoldering fire. And if we don't talk about the issues that drive that, whether it's rent, whether it's in the fact that in downtown Los Angeles, in Skid Row, 70% of the folks that are there are African-American. We have a whole committee looking at black homelessness at the Homeless Services Authority to understand youth homelessness, LGBTQ community who come to places where they look to have freedom but find themselves on the streets. We have to, I think, really have all hands on what is a smoldering fire and what is our commitment to each other. I think that it is there. If we can prove it in moments of fires, we can absolutely prove it in moments where it lasts many more days than that.
We've got a bunch of great questions from the audience here in the room. This question says, approximately 40% of houseless youth are LGBTQ. Are any of your cities offering specific assistance to this vulnerable group?
Yes, I'll just finish where I stepped up before. Yes, we are. We're building specific sites. And we need more beds for the trans community because inevitably in shelter environment, trans community, it's really tough. If it's trans women, non-trans women often will make life very difficult. We need dedicated trans spaces too.
This question says, I can appreciate that you all hail from the Big 11, but what are you hearing from your rural counterparts about their needs? Do you think a statewide solution or set of solutions could also embrace California's smaller rural towns and cities?
Yes, and of course, this is not just an urban problem, but it also speaks to the need for a more regional approach to how we go about solving the problem, because the smaller cities, the smaller counties often don't have the infrastructure to do this on their own, but with a regional approach, they have more of that ability, I think, to help folks. But this is no longer just an urban problem.
A couple state policy questions here. Senator Scott Wiener from San Francisco had this really controversial proposal earlier this year, didn't get very far in the legislature, but it would have required local governments to approve denser housing near transit in a way that really would overhaul the traditional lines of authority and take away some local control that is the norm in our system. Do you see policies like this bill, Senate Bill 827, as part of the solution?
Yes. I mean, I supported it the first time. But I will say that if the legislature doesn't have the appetite for it statewide, again, we have this strategy to ask for a set of policies that might only apply to the Bay Area, because we do think that there's support from our legislative delegation for these more aggressive things. And for example, I mean, since it seems like rent control seems to give people pause, we are declaring that we have a housing emergency and that we are going to talk about anti-rent gouging regulations to apply to the whole Bay Area for at least 15 years. Yep. Again, this is a crisis.
I'd like to comment on this local control issue for a moment, because it tends to be one of those issues that artificially divides, right? And I always say my constituents are the same as Kevin McCarthy's and Richard Pan's, right? When I was in the legislature, my constituents were the same as Kevin Johnson's. We all have different responsibilities, and local control is an important principle, but it might surprise you that I would say this as a mayor. I think it's highly overrated.
I agree with you. I do.
It's local control and responsibility. Local control to what end? Are we solving the housing supply crisis in the city? Are the stories like the one Mayor Schaff just told about Cupertino an anomaly? I don't think so. Where state policy pushes local government, but more importantly, society, to meet a crucial quality of life imperative, then the state policy should outweigh the local control. And, you know, I'm just tired of the us versus them. It's not getting us anywhere. But there's no question that this issue of local control is not in the Bible.
Well, and local isn't local anymore. I mean, this just came out that more than 100,000 of Darrell's residents are driving through all sorts of cities to come to work in my region. More than 100,000 Sacramentans. Is that how you call yourself?
Sacramentans. We're changing that because we're building industry here, clean industry in Sacramento.
So, right now, they're driving through all your other locally controlled cities to get to my locally controlled city.
Only like, been mayor for
local?
2 years.
What is local?
And I know you have a bunch of questions, but this is a really important one to stop on for a moment, because I told Senator Wiener that do work with us more closely, because I think there should be real punishments for cities who really don't build anything. But for those, for instance, we have a great success story. Maybe it's a template for what he could help pass here. We did a transit-oriented communities, transit-oriented development, as people know it, law in the city of Los Angeles as the result of a voter-approved measure a couple years ago on housing. And it gave the mayor the power to actually determine zoning height density near transit. It wasn't as vague a definition as his bill was, which was that, like, whenever any bus stopped at least every 15 minutes, it was basically the entire city of LA would have just gone, like, no zoning anymore. So that's why we weren't in favor. It wasn't nuanced at all for our geography. But what we've done in 1 year of having this thing that allows you to go much higher, and they gave me a baby bear, mama bear, and papa bear version, thinking, you know, he's a politician, he might go for one of the first two. We went above the papa bear version. We said go way up, because we're seeing all these millennials and others who are not working for a developer, who are not ginned up by City Hall, turning out to public meetings now saying, densify the city. I want to have something I can afford. And if people are willing on their own dime with no subsidy to build low income, very low income, or extremely low income, and everybody who does this knows these units never get built by anybody, they can go higher and higher and higher. 10,000 units in the first 10 months, I think, of this, almost 2,000 of them with no public subsidy, affordable, and a third of those extremely low income. So there is something to helping, like, look, if you don't meet your goals, this kind of an envelope comes over your city, because Cupertino needs to build more than 27 new units. But listen to the cities is my advice for Senator Wiener. Work with us at the beginning, and absolutely, let's get something done, because I hate pulling my weight only to know sometimes there's a neighbor next door who's living off of that like a barnacle.
Let me just jump on. Transit-oriented development is where you want the density. I mean, that's when we think about cities and those cities that are successful, and again, back to trying to, you know, provide housing that people can actually afford, we need to do that around transit corridors. Back to why I'm spending so much time in San Diego updating some of our community plans, which haven't been updated in some cases in 25 or 30 years, and tying those to master EIRs. And so he said, let's have that conversation now, and let's actually increase the amount that you're able to do so you don't have to have those types of discussions on every single one-off project that stops it and takes so much time. We also, just last week, again, back on transit-oriented districts, I'm going to dramatically slash the parking requirements. Why should you have so much parking requirements that adds tremendous cost to units? A lot of the folks aren't going to use them. And so, again, it's trying to be creative. It's trying to say, look, here's where today's housing is, the types of folks that we want to do. And around transit areas, that's absolutely the future of where you want that density. and our best opportunity to make some of these units affordable.
And Mayor, I'll say it works. We did area-specific plans a few years ago. We eliminated parking requirements in our downtown, and we have the biggest building boom Oakland has seen since the 1906 earthquake. I have more than 8,600 units under construction right now, and that same amount in the development pipeline.
So, I mean, one of the huge reasons that bill failed was the local control issue, and we have four mayors here sitting and saying,
but it wasn't just control.
I'm sorry, we weren't for it.
They were. It wasn't control in an abstract sense. I think it was.
They don't want change. They don't want. They won't.
There were some who didn't want that philosophically. Well, some of us aren't against it philosophically. It's just work with us, because if you come in with we're taking it away, and we're not looking at what you're doing at all, that's not a good way to approach it.
So it's not that it was not your cities and other local governments.
I like this.
I think the third time will be a charm. I think he'll get it done this time.
The best policy is the combination of the carrot and the stick, right?
Yep, exactly.
Where you provide the incentives to create more production. By the way, the whole state housing policy is focused on planning, not much on production.
Yeah,
planning is a prerequisite to production. But to me, if you're producing, then the state ought not to get in your business.
Exactly.
But if you're not producing,
exactly,
then I think that the state has every right to, and that overrides this concept of local control.
Great. Well, I think that is going to conclude. I want to thank the mayors for the really interesting conversation. Yep. Thank you so much, and thank all of you for coming.
This was Crisis on the Streets, a Mayor's Forum on Homelessness. This special is part of the California Dream Collaboration, which includes Capital Public Radio and CalMatters in Sacramento, KPCC in Los Angeles, KQED in San Francisco, and KPBS in San Diego. The event producers were Joe Barr of Capital Public Radio and Dave Lesher of CalMatters. The California Dream editor is Adrian Hill. Our event coordinator was Elaine Lin. Production and digital assistance were provided by Mark Jones, Chris Hagen, and Antonio Muniz of Capital Public Radio, and Nazneen Ridehan Foster of CalMatters. I'm Laurel Rosenhall of CalMatters. This show was produced by Capital Public Radio in Sacramento as part of the California Dream Collaboration, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the James Irvine Foundation.